home for every Notre Dame football game.
Goodbye, Brandon Wimbush. 58 yards. Sanders is pulling away with every stride, and he goes in. 92 yards.
Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT, presents.
Race is on. Josh Adams wins it. Touchdown, Notre Dame. 98 yards. 76-yard touchdown play to Equanimeous St. Brown.
Budweiser's weekday sports beat.
Faulkner breaks one tackle down the near sideline, gets a block, cuts back inside. Touchdown, Faulkner and Mishawaka.
York now in front, Ogilvy. They score! They score! Notre Dame to the Frozen Four! Gets it in by Rex Kluger with 1.5 seconds left. Notre Dame leads.
Your hosts are Eric Hansen and Darren Pritchett.
Good evening, everyone. It is 7 minutes after 5 o'clock, and this is Budweiser's weekday sports beat on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM. WSBT on this Tuesday, November 21st of 2017. I'm Darren Pritchett, Eric Hansen, Fighting Irish football insider for the South Bend Tribune. Will join me in just a couple of moments on the program this evening. What's at stake for the Notre Dame football team this week as they play at Stanford? We'll offer some scenarios coming up. An injury report on the Fighting Irish. Notre Dame getting healthier by the moment. Will EQ play on Saturday? Equanimeous St. Brown, the latest coming up in just a couple of moments. Stanford dealing with an injury to their best player, Bryce Love. Their running back, we will update his status. My five question of the day. Eric, an Associated Press college football pollster, he'll reveal his top five this week. And what did he do with the Fighting Irish? Next hour, a conversation on the Notre Dame wide receivers, the Irish going back on the road, what they need to do to beat Stanford to get to 10 wins on the season. We'll have rapid fire. And our final segment of the 6 o'clock hour will focus on Notre Dame basketball. The Irish opened up the Maui Classic last night, beating Chaminade, the host school, 83-56 behind a career-high 27-point performance from guard Matt Farrell, which included 4 of 7 three-point shots knocked down. The Fighting Irish are 4-0, and they will take on LSU tonight. The Tigers knocked off Michigan 77-75. It'll be Notre Dame and LSU tonight at 10:30 approximately on WSBT Radio. Pre-game coverage will start at 10:15. There are games before the Irish, so as you know, in tournament play, the start times tend to fluctuate. But right now, we're expecting a 10:30 opening tip on WSBT Radio. LSU taking on Notre Dame. These two teams have met just one time previously, and it was a big one, at least in terms of the crowd. January 20th, 1990, the game was played at the New Orleans Superdome in front of a then NCAA record 68,112. LSU featured the Twin Towers of Shaq O'Neal and Stanley Roberts, and they led the Irish, I should say, they led the Tigers to an 87-64 win over the Irish. So the second all-time meeting between Notre Dame and LSU on the floor in Maui tonight. And again, 10:30 tip approximately on 96.1 FM WSBT. The Broyles Award goes out to the nation's top college football assistant coach. Mike Elko made the initial list. He has now made the next list, the top 15, includes Mike Elko, so there is still a chance Elko could be named the best assistant coach in America. Bob Diaco won that award, I believe, back in 2012, helping the Irish to get to the national title game. So congrats to Mike Elko making the final 15 for the Broyles Award. And also it has been announced that Notre Dame senior offensive guard Quentin Nelson has been named a finalist for the 2017 Outland Trophy, which is presented to the nation's most outstanding interior lineman by the Football Writers Association of America. How about these numbers, folks? Quentin Nelson has not surrendered a sack or a quarterback hit and has allowed just 2 quarterback hurries in 744 offensive snaps this season. Remarkable. Over his career, 1,543 snaps, he has surrendered 3 sacks, none in the last 2 years. In those career games, just three quarterback hits, one in the last 2 years. And right now, Quentin Nelson is the highest rated offensive guard in terms of run blocking by Pro Football Focused. His total is 30.4. The next highest rated run blocking guard is at 24.1. So Quentin Nelson, just give him the Outland Trophy now. And as I've said many times, I don't understand why there's not more of a push for him for the Heisman. You watch him on film, you watch him, he is the most dominating player in college football, and who cares if no one ever votes for Lyman? Why can't we be different? Why can't we do something different? Because right now, the Heisman Trophy frontrunner is a guy that always seems to be having to apologize every other moment for something that he does on the football field, and that's Baker Mayfield, the quarterback of Oklahoma, tries to plant the flag in Columbus earlier this year. Oh, I'm sorry. And then obscene gestures and some inappropriate language from his sideline toward the Kansas sideline. Oh, I'm sorry. The oh sorry's become a little hollow after you have to say I'm sorry multiple times. And now he's not going to start against West Virginia. And I know he's apparently upset about it. But you know what? The excuse, the heat of the moment is used way too often, in my opinion. So for all the Heisman voters, and I'm not saying this because Eric is in the room, he's a Heisman voter. If there is a line in the balloting that talks about, and I'm not going to say it exactly, but there's a clause where you want the player to be of the utmost quality on and off the football field, then how in the world can anyone vote for Baker Mayfield this year? I mean, I hate to put you on the spot, Eric, but this stuff, does it matter to you?
Yeah, it does. I don't know to what extent, you know, I haven't examined all the other candidates. To me, again, I'm not a week by week.
I know
here's what my Heisman thinking is, but in just in general, has it played into my thoughts when there have been character issues or incidents of that nature? Yeah, they have. So it's, you know, it's something that would enter my thinking. And
so it's on the radar, at least.
Yeah, it's on the radar, and then I will give it more careful thought when it's time to vote.
I'm sure he'll probably win the award because there really isn't a number two choice right now if you're analyzing the situation as we speak. But
well, I mean, things can happen in the last couple weeks of a season, too.
I know, but he is so far out in front, according to all these estimations, that... And I know your name is not involved in that.
Well, what happened with the presidential election? Wasn't there a forecast there?
There were. Did not turn out as expected.
All I can remember is a lot of people... I've never seen it on TV before, people saying, well, that didn't go as projected.
Well, he's having a great season on the field. Just stop the garbage and the Heisman Trophy's pretty much in his back pocket. I know things can change, but he's in really good shape right now. Well, you know what? All Quentin Nelson does is pancake people and not allow his quarterback to get hit. But obviously that's not important in football because we don't want to put them in the Heisman conversation because those things aren't exciting. They're not important. I mean, how do you win a football game with a great offensive line? That's overrated, right? Ridiculous. I wish the Heisman Award would go away. I don't even care anymore. I'm done with it.
The one good thing is they do have the Joe Moore Award that goes to all the, you know, an entire offensive line, and Notre Dame is in the final or the semifinal seven for that. They've changed their how big their semifinal fields are and their final fields are the last couple of years. But they've been in the final group. They've been in the final six or seven, two out of the last 3 years Notre Dame has. And Stanford's in it, too.
Well, if Notre Dame does not win, tip of the cap to whoever beats them, because it's going to be hard to beat them. This line's been really good this year.
There's some very good ones. Stanford has been really good after the first couple weeks of the season. Mm-hmm. They're really struggling, and they played with a true freshman left offensive tackle most of the year. And he's been outstanding, but he is looks like he's doubtful for this game, and that's Walker Little. Mm-hmm. So we'll see.
But how about Quentin Nelson? 744 offensive snaps this year, no sacks, not even a quarterback hurry. Remarkable.
You know,
that's unbelievable.
You know what would be what will be an interesting matchup on Saturday? you know, Harrison Phillips is going to line up over Sam Mustipher, Stanford's nose guard. For a team that's very average in defense, they've got two really headlining players. They've got a safety in Reed and then this kid Harrison Phillips at nose guard. But Quentin Nelson is going to bump heads with Harrison Phillips.
Bring it.
Yeah, so that'll be interesting. That could launch your Heisman campaign there, Darren. Hey, I always am open to players that are unconventional in terms of getting Heisman votes, and I don't feel like it's a wasted vote because I feel what it says is the nation's most outstanding player. It doesn't say the player with the best stats or the best tangible statistics, and so I've voted for defensive players many times. I don't know that I've voted for an offensive lineman, but I may have. Oh, I think probably the year Tony Mandarich was in it.
Orlando Pace?
I may have had Orlando in my top three. So I've gone off the board. I think last year I had an Alabama defensive lineman in my final three. So,
well, Eric, I just don't like the excuse. Well, linemen never win the Heisman Trophy, so it's a waste of time. Why not try to do something different? Because the field is crowded with skill position players. Why not start something different and new and put a campaign together for the most dominating player on the football team and one of the most dominating players in college football?
Well,
I don't get it.
I think where you can make a pretty good case for Nelson beyond just him pancaking people is lifting his team up. You know, he makes the people around him better as well. And not just with his play on the field, but just what he did off the field as one of the captains on this team. And Mike McGlinchey would certainly fall into that category as well, and the other captains. But Quentin Nelson, you know, certainly has that kind of pull with the team where I think that he gives them confidence. I think had Quentin Nelson not come back to Notre Dame, let's say Nelson and McGlinchey, what kind of season do you think Notre Dame would have had? And it's not that they wouldn't have had a good offensive line, but would they have had two leaders like that on the offensive line that everybody followed?
Doubtful.
Yeah.
Very doubtful. Well, if any school can pull off something kind of different, it's Notre Dame. You know?
Mm-hmm.
They've got that ability. There's some schools that can do something a little out of the ordinary, and they're one of those schools. There aren't many. There are not many. And you know what? How many snaps has Quentin Nelson missed this year due to injury?
Zero. Yep.
Kind of important to me. He's in there every single time he's tapped on the shoulder.
Well, his Brian Kelly lift after the Michigan State game got him on my Heisman radar.
Good for you. And he's not bad on the field either.
He's not
too shabby. I don't know if we'll see a better offensive guard in a long, long time.
Well, I'll tell you, wrote about this for Monday, Monday's paper, and I'm not sure if you saw the article, but I just happened to run out into his father outside mm-hmm. the gates at Notre Dame on Saturday night.
Great quotes.
And, yeah, just the thought, I mean, you know, I had never met Craig Nelson before or his mom, Mary Ellen. And, you know, we just started talking and he mentioned, you know, he was so happy his son came back. And I was kind of waiting to hear, you know, his stock really went up. Harry Heastand really was right. He didn't say any of that. He said, I wanted to see my son watch a man go through adversity and handle it the right way. And I just was blown away. I thought that was really, really interesting.
And he was talking about Brian Kelly.
He was talking about Brian Kelly. And he was not in Brian Kelly's corner, per se, before this season. He wasn't a huge Brian Kelly fan before. Mike Varell had written about that, mm-hmm. That, you know, what got Quentin to Notre Dame was Harry Heastand. But I'll tell you what, Quentin Nelson's dad is a big Brian Kelly fan now, and really it was just an interesting conversation, refreshing. And then I, you know, we were just talking informally, so I texted him, and I, you know, hours later, or it might have even been a day later, and said, you know what, that just kind of stuck with me, do you mind if I use that? Because I would never want to use just a casual conversation without getting permission.
And he said yes.
And he said yes.
Made for a great, great couple of quotes.
Thanks.
Without a doubt. And he said, one heck of a football player. I know Brian Kelly today was joking that he offered him his parking space to try to get him back for next
year. Brian's got a good parking space, too.
One of the few people that can't get a ticket at Notre Dame.
He can't get a ticket. And not only that, they have it blocked off next to his car, so nobody can park like right next to him and chip his door.
Really?
Yeah.
That's big time.
That is big time.
Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett with you. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT. The Fighting Irish at 9-2 will take on 8-3 Stanford this Saturday. Kickoff a little after 8 o'clock on 96.1 FM, WSBT. So pregame coverage, Budweiser's Game Day Sports Beat, 5-7 this week. Reggie Brooks and I will be up late Saturday night into Sunday morning with the official Notre Dame football postgame show. Probably we'll get started right around 11:45 p.m. midnight. That's normally the ballpark time we get started. We'll talk for a couple of hours, hopefully about a Notre Dame victory over Stanford. 22 minutes after the top of the hour. When we come back, what's at stake for the Fighting Irish this week as they take on Stanford? And we'll update you on Notre Dame injuries. How about Dexter Williams? We keep thinking we're going to see him, but we don't see him. What about this Saturday? Find out next on Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
This is Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Nick Wisher, 12-yard touchdown catch.
On Michiana's Sports Leader.
He's coming and sacked out of bounds by Dalen Hayes.
96.1 FM, WSBT.
Breaking into open field inside the 20, inside the 10, and standing up is Josh Adams.
27 minutes after the top of the hour, Eric Hansen, Fighting Irish football insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm Darren Pritchett, WSBT Radio Sports Director. This is Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, presented by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. And we are also brought to you by Sport Clips. Confidence comes free with every haircut at Sport Clips near the Granger Super Target. Notre Dame, 9-2. Stanford, 8-3. That's the matchup in Palo Alto this Saturday night at 8 o'clock on 96.1 FM WSBT. So what do the Irish have to play for on Saturday? Irish head coach Brian Kelly will fill in the blanks.
You know, there's a lot here in the sense that, you know, a win against this football team is important because it's the Legends Trophy for us. Getting that back is very important. It'd give us all the traveling trophies this year, which is something that's kind of, you know, important to us that we've talked about in our room here. You know, beating all the teams that we had lost to last year. Significant for us as well in terms of turning the tables on last year. Team that we haven't beat out there since 2007. Certainly another nationally ranked team. And finally, you know, it probably puts us in a really good position to be considered for a playoff spot, but most assuredly a New Year's Six slot, which, you know, obviously that's a selective position and one that you know, everybody's got their eyes on when they're talking about a great season. So a lot of really big things to look at, but most important, we've got to play the kind of football that we played earlier later in October.
Well, the good news is Palo Alto, their fan base, not exactly as wild as the Miami fan base. So it'll be a much more tame atmosphere for this Saturday night. But it's almost sometimes a polite crowd. Now, Stanford has really done a good job against the Irish going all the way back to 2007, the last time the Irish have won there. Now, they've had Jim Harbaugh and David Shaw put together some really good football teams during this time frame. But it hasn't really been about the environment slowing down the Irish like possibly it factored in against Miami a couple of weeks ago. But Stanford is just pretty much a physical football team that if you don't match up to them physically, they can be very difficult to handle. And they're going to be a physical football team, but Notre Dame also brings that physical element to the table.
Well, and, you know, the last time they played out there, just a very poor performance on defense at the end of the game. Just a very poor game plan. Brian Kelly actually called it the prevent to win defense. He goes, we won't do that this year.
Good. Yeah. Because that's what happened.
Absolutely.
Game was in their back pocket with under a minute to go. The long pass down the middle, a field goal, and any hopes of the playoffs went down the tube. And now the Irish are trying to fight their way back into the playoff. They didn't get a lot of help this weekend. You know, it's still very slim for the Irish to find their way back into the playoff conversation. They got to get into the top four. The new rankings come out later tonight. So 1 week later, after we have this conversation, Eric, do you see any reason to get your hopes up that the Irish can wiggle their way into a playoff spot?
I think it's difficult that they don't have two big games. I think if they had two games and they're both against top 25 teams, then I think they might. But I just think it's difficult to overcome. I think you'd have to be probably in the top six or seven to have a shot at it. And I could concoct a doomsday scenario that they would get in, but I just don't think it's very realistic. Mm-hmm. It would include, you know, Clemson losing to South Carolina, then beating Miami, Miami losing to Pittsburgh. And yeah. I mean, there's just a lot of weird stuff. Weird stuff has happened before, just not in the amount that it would need to lift you from 8 to 4, I think.
Brian Kelly today was asked if they beat Stanford, would they be playoff worthy, at least to be considered by the 13-member committee?
Top 8, you're strongly considered, right? We're just outside that right now, or close to it, I don't know. We need another top 20 win, top 25 win, and I think we'll be strongly considered. I think the teams that are up there have all had one bad day. And we had one bad day, too. We'll have to see how the rest of it goes. But we got to play well on Saturday. It's important to play well against a really good football team.
And it doesn't help. The two teams you lost to are ahead of you and the standings, and it's going to be very difficult to jump those two teams, barring them losing coming down the stretch. So let's put aside the playoff for a second. Eric, you've documented that a New Year's Six bowl game is clinched if they're in the top 10 of the final college football playoff rankings, and that final ranking coming out December 3rd, if I'm not mistaken. It would be right. Next week.
Next Sunday.
So they're 9-2. You beat Stanford, they're going to go to a New Year's Bowl Six game. You've documented that. If the Irish lose, does the New Year's Bowl Six game go by the boards more than likely?
Yeah, they wouldn't still be in the top 10. I think it would be difficult for them to stay in the top 10 with a loss to Stanford being a three-loss team. I just don't see a scenario. There are teams that can be outside the top 10, but they would be an automatic qualifier, a conference qualifier. For example, the Pac-12. Let's say Notre Dame beats Stanford, but Stanford plays USC for the Pac-12 championship and beats them. Stanford would get to go to the Fiesta Bowl or one of the other New Year's Six because they're a conference champion. They would, and they're not. Their conference isn't going to make the playoffs, so they would get in, and they would have three losses. They wouldn't be in the top 10.
Okay, fair enough. Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett with you. 26 minutes in front of the top of the hour here on WSBT Radio. Let's update some Notre Dame injuries. We'll start with wide receiver Equanimeous St. Brown. Took quite a tumble on Saturday against the United States Naval Academy, climbing the ladder on a high throw from Brandon Wimbush, got clipped and came down hard on the turf. Eric, what is his status for the Stanford week?
Well, good news so far. He's progressing through the concussion protocol. He was cleared today for non-contact practice. If he makes it through that, limited contact on Wednesday, full contact on Thursday, and that's the timetable he needs to keep. If he gets delayed a day in that, then I don't think you'll see him against Stanford.
Good news, we didn't hear day-to-day, which is normally a bad sign.
That's usually bad. Osiris St. Brown plays for Stanford, but he's redshirting this year. So if Equanimeous isn't in the game, there are no St. Browns in the game.
Wide receiver Cam Smith, we have not seen much of him lately.
Yeah, he had 7 catches in his first 2 games. He's missed 6 this year after transferring from Arizona State, including the last 5 because of a hamstring injury. Brian Kelly said he'd know more tomorrow as to whether Cam Smith would play. The fact that he's already this deep into the week and still up in the air, I don't see him playing, given how inactive he's been for the past 5 weeks. I think you just see if he can help you in the rotation in a bowl game.
We're going to talk more about the wide receiver position next hour, but we will tell you that BK said today if Equanimeous St. Brown can't play, Miles Boykin would take his place in the lineup more than likely. What about running back Dexter Williams? This is always the million-dollar question.
You know, and this is the most emphatic Brian Kelly's been about him being close to 100%. The thing is, you know, we've heard that, and he feels like he's going to be a part of the game plan, an important part of the game plan. He's got 34 carries this year. He leads the team in yards per carry. I just don't think he's been right since the Michigan State game. Maybe he will be against Stanford. It's unfortunate. And had he played in one less game, one fewer game this year, it would have made sense to redshirt him. But he had already passed the threshold of the minimum number of games that you can play and still get a medical redshirt. And so they've tried to bring him along, and it just hasn't happened. But, you know, he's a dynamic player when he's healthy. It's just been a shame. So I'm not making any predictions on his availability. I know Brian is hopeful that he can play, but we've seen weeks like that where it looks like he's good to go and then we don't see him at all.
For Stanford, they're dealing with a key injury to running back Bryce Love. He has been battling an ankle injury for a couple of weeks.
Actually, since the middle of October.
Yeah, and he is a player that is a difference maker for Stanford. 1,700 rushing yards this year. 101 rushing yards against Cal Saturday, and he re-aggravated the injury. Had a 57-yard touchdown run, but most of the damage done by Love on that one carry against the Bears. Now, David Shaw met the media this afternoon and updated the status of Bryce Love, and he said that Bryce Love is day to day, which I don't know what that means in the Stanford world, but if it's what it means in the Notre Dame world, we may not see him on Saturday. And the quote from head coach David Shaw on Bryce Love's ankle, quote, not as good as we'd like it to be, end quote.
The one thing about Bryce Love, though, is he's been kind of the opposite of Dexter Williams. There have been, kind of doomsday reports on his ankle, and I watch a lot of Stanford football because I'm up late waiting to do my top 25. Like the Washington game, it was like he was limping off the field, and then he'd get back on the field and he'd run past people. But 2 out of his last 3 games, he's been at 101 yards or less. The Washington game was the exception that was kind of pushed in the middle of that. You know, if I'm Brian Kelly, I'm counting on him playing. And if he doesn't, Cameron Scarlett is a different back. He's still a good back. Notre Dame actually tried to recruit Cameron Scarlett. He was involved with them. He's a bigger back, but he averages about half as many yards per carry as Bryce Love. But, you know, their offensive line is so good. You know, I know last year when Christian McCaffrey wasn't going to play, people were like, oh, wow, Notre Dame's got the game in the bag. Well, guess who subbed for Christian McCaffrey last year? A guy nobody knew about named Bryce Love. And he ran for over 100 yards against Notre Dame in a 17-10 win.
Now rolling this year for Stanford, and Brian Kelly today said that the one thing about Bryce Love, he always seems to break the first tackle attempt.
And ultimately, he's got incredible speed. I just love the fact that here's a guy that he's not McCaffrey in terms of catching the football. So he's a different back, but he's got elite speed and he breaks tackles. And that is a lethal mix. You have to tackle this guy, and that's what makes him a special player.
How well do the Irish match up against this running game?
I think if KJ Costello, the quarterback, isn't a real threat, and I think he's better than Keller Christ at running the ball, I think Notre Dame is a better matchup than some of the other teams they faced. You know, Wolford and Rozier were so good with the quarterback draws and some of their run-pass options. I don't see Costello as being quite in that class. And so, and the fact that Stanford's passing game doesn't complement it as well. I think this isn't the most difficult matchup they've had. They're going against one of the best players in the country if he's healthy. But and that offensive line is awfully good. But if you can make Stanford one-dimensional, then you're going to, KJ Costello is going to have a game like Kevin Hogan had 2 years ago where he was, you know, lights had out. A passing efficiency rating that was in the 200s. And I don't think Notre Dame's pass defense is going to allow that. So I don't think it's an easy assignment given their offensive line, but I don't think it's something that they can't handle in terms of playing well against them.
KJ Costello, a big quarterback, 6'5", 217, a sophomore out of California. He has played in 8 of 11 games this year. And right now, he is completing 60% of his passes, 5 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, against 60% completion percentage, which is better than Keller Christ, who sits at 54% so far this year. And Costello, running the football, as Eric mentioned, can do some damage. 17 carries, 100 yards, 5.9 yards per carry, and 3 rushing touchdowns for the sophomore. The question is, can they get enough balance with their passing game? The Notre Dame corners have been playing strong football. Troy Pride even came up with an interception on a poorly thrown football against the United States Naval Academy. So, all things considered, with the way the Irish corners have played, you like them in most matchups. It's going to come down to the pass rush and the play of the safety to see if they can take care of their assignments to allow the corners to do some big things.
Yeah. And then, you know, I think this game has the potential to be high scoring if Stanford can find an offensive rhythm, because I think Notre Dame's going to score on Stanford's defense. Like I said, they have two elite players, and they just must be young at the other spots because their defense is very average to below average.
Final item I want to bring up in this segment, and Eric, you asked the question to Brian Kelly earlier today during his Tuesday press conference, which was live on WSBT Radio. And you asked him more of a big picture question, which he loves.
Yeah.
And you asked him about the model that was created for this year's football team. Is it sustainable, or was this just a special group that did big things this year? So you're wanting to know, was this a great team, or is this the model helping this really good football team achieve some greatness? So Brian Kelly took that question and answered it in this fashion.
Well, I think any time that you, you know, have a shift within your program, the only way that you can go about and really lay down your mission is that it has to be sustainable. So sustainability starts with what your mission is, and that is to graduate all your players and play for a national championship. And then how are you going to get there? And that is to build the traits on a day-to-day basis that will help get you there. That's the sustainable piece, building those traits amongst our players. So those two things work together. The rest is business as usual, right? Recruiting the right kind of players to Notre Dame, having the right coaches in place, strength and conditioning, offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, special teams, all those other things as well. But it starts with the sustainability is really your mission, and then, you know, how are you building towards that mission?
Well, it's a very physical football team. That's great to see, and if that's sustainable, that's going to be a huge plus. Now, McGlinchey and Nelson on the offensive side of the football, Eric, help with that physicality. Moving forward, do you believe what we're seeing right now is sustainable? A lot of players back
Yeah,
from this year's team, so that's a good sign, although you lose those two offensive linemen.
I asked some of the players that same question because I was curious their point of view, and it's something I'll be writing about later in the week. But they felt like it was, and it kind of started with the change in the culture in the weight room. You know, Drew Tranquil pointed out they spend about 70% of their time with those coaches. And so changing the culture there was huge. Now, I think that where Brian Kelly got a good roll of the dice is that he had incredible leaders to help make the shift. So he won't, if he doesn't have that elite level leadership and just has good leadership, I think the model is sustainable. But I think he wouldn't have been able to shift it without those personalities. And I think that's what the important step was. But, you think about the style of football that they're playing. I don't think statistically they'll be as similar next year. I actually think they'll be more balanced. Brandon Wimbush will be more evolved as a passer and so forth. But I still think physicality is going to be their calling card. And I think on defense, I mentioned this on the show last night, you're going to see a huge shift in the way they play defense because they will be so much stronger at safety next year, and they will continue to build off that. Just because you haven't seen safeties getting beat doesn't mean that's the ceiling for that position group. And I mentioned Deshaun last night. I did some research. There are zero interceptions from the safeties this year. The last time that that happened in two platoon football, which started in 1964, the last time that happened in a Notre Dame was never. They've never had a season where the safeties have zero interceptions. And that's just one mark of it. You have such good corners. And I'm not docking those safeties. They're not experienced. Nick Coleman went from being your sixth option at cornerback to being a starter. He's held his own. He's improved every week. Jalen Elliott was a high school quarterback, all-state quarterback that's made strides. But you're going to be able to add that experience of what they've learned this year, and you're going to add Alohi Gilman and Derek Allen to that mix next year. And then the younger guys, Jordan Jenmark Heath, may turn into something special. Isaiah Robertson. I think those things are going to help that safety group. And once you have safeties you can count on, you can do a lot more with your defense up front.
12 minutes in front of the top of the hour. Eric and Darren with you. Coming up next are my five question of the day from 96.1 FM, WSBT.
One question, five answers. This is the My Five Question of the Day on Michiana's Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Eric is an Associated Press college football voter. He passed along his vote this weekend, so let's find out who he had in his top five. But first, let's find out, what did you do with the Fighting Irish after beating Navy?
I left them at number eight. It was a really bizarre voting week because there were so few competitive games, so there was very little movement in anybody's top 25.
It felt like the AP College Football Top 10 was a scoreboard for top 25 men's college basketball right now. Big names against no names. All right, let's get to your top five. If you're in charge of the college football playoff as of today, the last team out would be?
Auburn. And that was the same way as last week. And they will have their chance to play their way into the committee's hearts this Saturday when they play, or this weekend when they play Alabama.
Now to the four teams that would make your playoff. Number four.
The Oklahoma Sooners, who edged the Kansas Jayhawks 41-3.
Number three.
I went with the Clemson Tigers there.
Okay.
After their win over Citadel 61-3.
Number two.
Miami struggled with Virginia for a while, but they were able to get the turnover chain thing going, and now there is turnover chain sushi in Miami, I saw yesterday on Twitter.
I noticed that.
And they were number two, not because of the sushi, though.
Was it tempting to move Miami after they got off to such a ragged start in that game, or is that just part of a game? They finished the game extremely scoring the final 30 points.
They finished, and I think we all kind of knew they were ripe for that. Noon, a post-Notre Dame funk, they played like they needed to when they had to, but their defense, their pass defense got ripped by that Virginia quarterback in the first half,
which was eye-opening. AP top five vote. Eric had Auburn 5, Oklahoma 4, Clemson 3, Miami 2, and your number one team is
Alabama.
Yep, no doubt. The new rankings come out later tonight. I believe it is 7 o'clock?
7 o'clock, thankfully, this week. Last week it was supposed to be 9, and our deadline was, like, for me to hit the page with my story on it was, like, 9:30, and at 9:35 they were still... they had just started the show, and first they had to interview each other on what they thought was going to happen.
Yes.
And my hair turned another shade of gray.
That's the My Five question of the day. 4 minutes in front of the top of the hour, 96.1 FM WSB.
Here's Eric Hansen with what's coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune Sports Section.
Well, I will have today's Notre Dame football notebook with all kinds of goodies in that. We'll also have last night's Notre Dame men's game, basketball game against Chaminade in the Maui Classic, and they play LSU, I believe, tonight.
10:30 on WSBT Radio.
So we'll have that in the next day's paper. We're kind of a day behind. Anthony Anderson has a story on the ND women's basketball team, and we'll have, of course, Darren, much, much more.
Very good. Thank you, sir. We'll do it again tomorrow live, then an off day for Thanksgiving, and back on Friday.
Sounds
and
good.
We play football on Saturday one more time in the regular season. Sean will join me in just a couple of moments. It's the top of the hour at WSBT South Bend.
Your home for every Notre Dame football game.
Goodbye, Brandon Wimbush. 58 yards. Sanders is pulling away with every stride, and he goes in. 92 yards.
Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents.
Race is on. Josh Adams wins it. Touchdown, Notre Dame. 98 yards. 76-yard touchdown play to Equanimeous St. Brown.
Budweiser's weekday sports beat.
Faulkner breaks one tackle down the near sideline, gets a block, cuts back inside. Touchdown, Faulkner and Mishawaka.
York now in front, Ogilvie. They score! They score! Notre Dame to the Frozen Four! Gets up and in by Rex Kluger with 1.5 seconds left. Notre Dame leads.
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Stiers.
Hour number two of Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat. 7 minutes after the top of the hour. He's Sean Stiers. I'm Darren Pritchett. College basketball tonight on WSBT Radio. If you can stay up. Some of us will be staying up. Scheduled 10:30 start time.
That's true, it's a late one.
You see the bags under my eyes right now?
No kidding.
It's going to be tough. I may have to take a nap and set the alarm and wake up to watch and listen to a little basketball tonight. Because I'm not going to make it to 10:30, by the way I feel right now.
I don't blame you. And hopefully they win. Not just because you want them to win, but we've got our first Mishawaka basketball game tomorrow, too. And if Notre Dame would lose tonight, that changes our programming around. Ooh. for Mishawaka basketball as well. So
right now, both games would be on WSBT Radio if the Irish win tonight.
Correct.
Okay, so Mishawaka Memorial would be at 7:30.
Correct.
Approximately. And then the Irish would play, is it 10:30 again?
10:30.
I haven't even looked that far ahead.
Yep.
All right, so hopefully that happens. A nice doubleheader on a Friday night here on WSBT Radio.
Would be nice.
And LSU knocked off Michigan, who has not played great so far this year. LSU, from what I read on Twitter today, kind of an exciting up-and-coming team. They beat the Maize and Blue 77-75. So you've got Marquette and Wichita State in the upper winners bracket. That's kind of a fun game. Mm-hmm. And Notre Dame and LSU in the bottom part of the bracket. You know, I was out of town yesterday, but the Wichita State game was on a television I was near. They were down like 10 in the second half.
Really?
And I never saw the final score last night. So when I was looking up information on the Irish today, I noticed that Wichita State had won by 10 over Cal. So quite a comeback. Latter portion of that game by the Shockers. And the goal has been to get Wichita State and Notre Dame to the final. So that is still a possibility. But Wichita State has to beat Marquette, and the Irish have to take care of LSU. How about the fact
they
LSU
actually they did they beat Marquette by 14? I just saw the final. They've already had it on.
Oh, so it's already done.
Yeah.
So they must be playing consolation games now.
That's a good question. I don't know.
Because why would they have that?
Because on ESPN at the top, it's got Wichita State 80, Marquette 66. And I did see part of it earlier today, and I was thinking, this wasn't last night, was it? But no, it was live.
Interesting. So they'll get a little more rest than the Irish.
Or a lot LSU. More. A lot more rest, potentially.
I want to be respectful to our LSU fans in the listening audience.
Right.
Whoever wins the game will have as much rest. One of them will. Hopefully the Irish will pull out that victory. Only the second time Notre Dame and LSU has ever met. I found that very surprising, and the only other meeting was in front of 68,112 at the New Orleans, Louisiana Superdome, January 20th, 1990.
No kidding.
And the LSU front line featured Stanley Roberts and Shaquille O'Neal. And LSU won 87-64. Only time they've met. Kind of bizarre.
Never would have thought that.
Mm-mm.
But then again, Notre Dame really doesn't cross paths with a lot of SEC teams very often on the hardwoods.
First thing I thought of with LSU in the NCAA tournament wasn't Indiana's opponent LSU and Bob Knight punched the phone along press row? I think it was LSU. Maybe I'm wrong.
I'm not sure.
But all the incidents kind of flow together. One of them probably was against LSU.
A chair, a phone, there's a good chance.
The whip.
that too. Oh, man.
He was on the Joe Buck interview show, and I did not watch it. I had no interest of watching it. As someone that appreciated Bob Knight as a basketball coach, I think one of the smartest minds pre-shot clock that we had, never respected him for the things he did away from the court or some of his actions on the court.
Right.
And I've always been, and I'm not an Indiana fan, I just always had hoped that there would be a way to get Indiana and Bob Knight back together, at least on terms. When a team gets celebrated at IU, he won't come back for it. You know what? After all this time, I hope he stays away. Indiana doesn't need him. They don't deserve him. He's just become so bitter and unbearable. I mean, he went after John Wooden very hard in that show.
You talked about the Joe Buck, and I heard that, and when he said that, it's like, come on, John Wooden. You don't have any respect for John Wooden. And apparently it had something to do with a booster from back in the day who was doing things, and John Wooden confided at night that he didn't know how to deal with him, and it's like, John Wooden is one of the nicest people ever. Are you kidding me?
I wonder what John Wooden thought of Bob Knight's actions.
Yeah, I know. If John was around to defend himself, and I bet he wouldn't even go in that direction if he was asked. But
it's just this whole,
I don't know,
bitter old man thing is just gotten old and. For so long, I wanted them to get back together and have Bob at all these great events because, man, the fans would just go berserk.
Oh, yeah.
But now I'm to the point, the things he has said, his bitterness, Indiana doesn't need him.
And the thing now, it's all those administrators who were there when he was dismissed are gone now.
They're gone.
So what's the grudge? Because that's who your grudge should be against, right? The people who let you go, not the institution, the university itself. None of those people are there anymore.
It felt like when Bob went to Texas Tech that every IU fan had a Texas Tech bumper sticker or license plate. Remember seeing all those around here?
That's right.
Around the state, it was remarkable. I mean, people loved him and just
like you saw Notre Dame people with South Carolina stuff when Lou Holtz was there.
Yeah, that's right.
See, a little different, but still.
But now, I don't know how the fans would react to him. I guess they would still probably go nuts if he came back. But you know what? You've got those great players. You got the banners. A lot of great memories. Bob Knight would be nice to be a part of that, but you don't need him.
No.
You really don't.
Nope.
Move on and just enjoy the great players every time they come back to Indiana University. All right, so Wichita State beat Marquette 80-66. So if Notre Dame beats LSU, they'll take on Wichita State in the title game tomorrow night in Maui. If they lose, they'll take on Marquette in an old independent battle from years gone by. Mm-hmm. They face DePaul, might as well face Marquette in the same year, but hopefully not.
Hopefully that doesn't happen.
Postseason play.
That's right.
Okay, so that's what's going on with college basketball. Notre Dame tonight at around 10:30 here on 96.1 FM. WSBT, and let me just throw this in. The Irish figured out a way to win against Navy 24-17. It's never pretty, nor does it need to be. Just figure out a way to beat Navy, right?
Correct.
Just find a way to beat Navy. Just find a way to beat Navy.
And that statement becomes more true every year.
Very true.
Used to make fun of him for saying that. Now, actually a really good thought. Just figure out a way to beat this team, pick up the W, and head to the next one, because it's never going to be easy. I don't know why I don't learn my lesson. Thinking the Irish are going to win by double digits, they're going to run the ball extremely well, it's going to be a great day, they're going to get back on track. Every year after the Irish and Navy play, I always tell myself, keep the score close. I never learned my lesson. I had them winning by 20 points. And
I did too.
We should learn our lesson. It's never going to be the way you expect just because Navy has a way of playing great football against the Irish. It's unbelievable.
And Eric and Tyler and I all talked yesterday about sort of questioning how the game started offensively for the Irish with three designed pass plays, because you said it, we all said it leading up to the game. We thought that they would really just come out power running game and try to ram it down their throats, and just thought when you know that possessions are going to be limited and you win the coin toss, you take the ball to start the game, you would think that they would want to make sure that they possess the ball for at least a few minutes before giving it up, and instead incomplete pass and a scramble, and they give it right back to them right away.
You know, Sean, I don't think anything you or the guys said is incorrect. I'm with you. And then you look at the plays called by Chip Long. If they're executed, there's some really good pass play opportunities, but the ball was not thrown in the right spot. So had the ball been thrown in the right spot, they're moving the sticks. It's not like there were some terribly designed plays, but they were not executed by the team, which then leads to that conversation. Why don't you just run it down their throat?
But again.
But I agree with you guys.
You know who your quarterback is before those plays are ever called.
I
know who your quarterback is. He's a 50% passer.
I agree.
And the weather is horrible. And I agree that there are points in the game where you were going to have to throw, but mm-hmm. I just think that you use the run. That is the strength of your team. You're running for over 300 yards a game. You use the run to set up the pass. You don't just start off passing the ball because you're getting a certain look.
I don't disagree with you guys. I'm just saying,
no.
If those passes are completed, we may not have the same conversation.
Sure.
We might.
That's how it is. Not every play that goes wrong is a bad play call.
Yes.
Execution still has something to do with it. That's on both sides. So I can agree with you on that, but again,
but after a
you
couple
know
of
who your quarterback is.
Well, after a couple of high throws and getting your best wide receiver injured,
and
it was
that,
time to run the football.
Exactly.
I mean,
exactly.
That's the danger of those high throws. Tip passes that are intercepted and getting your wide receivers injured. That was a nasty fall by Equanimeous St. Brown. And the latest is in concussion protocol, but scheduled to be a part of non-contact practice today. If that went well, he would move to limited contact in practice on Wednesday. If that goes okay, hopefully he would be full contact in practice on Thursday, which make him eligible for Saturday's game against Stanford. And we joked about this, but it's really true. When Brian Kelly says day-to-day, normally they don't play on Saturday. Day-to-day was never mentioned when Equanimeous St. Brown was talked about today. So let's look at this from the worst-case scenario. If EQ does not play against Stanford, who is going to get the call for the Fighting Irish? It sure sounds like Miles Boykin might be one of the first guys tapped on the helmet. Here's Fighting Irish head coach Brian Kelly.
Boykin will go in and do a great job. You know, we'll just plug and play him. I think what you'll see is, you know, his ability – you know, in the game against Navy, he filled in very nicely, caught a couple passes, did a nice job blocking on the perimeter. So I think you just take EQ out and you put Miles Boykin in there and we keep rolling.
All right, so Boykin would be the guy that would get the call if Equanimeous St. Brown cannot go this year. Interesting to look at his numbers, and as a part of Rapid Fire this summer, this fall, you've brought up a lot of different combinations for what could be Equanimeous St. Brown's season, and I wish I would have said under on every single thing you mentioned this year, because the answer to all of your questions were under. You take a look at his stat line, Equanimeous St. Brown leads the Irish in the number of times targeted by wide receivers at 54. That almost seems low, doesn't it?
It does.
Just with the expectation, because we thought he could catch 60 balls this year.
He had 58. If not more. Yeah, he had 58 catches last year.
So he had more catches last year than targets this year, as of right now. And if he doesn't play against Stanford, he'll end up with more catches last year than targets this year.
Yeah.
That is a bizarre circumstance.
I know.
But with a great running game and a quarterback that's 50%, you kind of see how that number comes about.
Mm-hmm.
He is second on the team in catches with 26. That would have been September for me, if I would have guessed.
That's right.
357 yards, also second on the Irish. And he has three receiving touchdowns, which is also second on the team. You know, Boykin hasn't played as much, but he still has eight catches for 131 yards and a touchdown. Equanimeous St. Brown is the superior player, but I think Boykin's a pretty good secondary plan for this football team. He's made a couple of nice catches from Brandon Wimbush so far this year. Not the same in terms of the way his career has unfolded like EQ, but I think an opportunity for him to show the coaching staff what he can do, because you think back to fall camp at Culver, who was in the starting lineup when we were there? It was Miles Boykin.
Yeah, that's true.
And it's bizarre to think how this season has not unfolded the way possibly you thought when you watched a couple of practices down in Culver.
He was a big part of, I think, why we were so excited about this group of receivers. Everything we saw from him in the spring, and there was just every reason to. Between him, Chase Claypool, we still really didn't know what we were going to get from Claypool. But you figured St. Brown was the constant, and anything that you got after that, it just showed how much depth that there was. We haven't seen it yet, but maybe if he does end up out there, then he does kind of get his opportunity to really show something in the regular season finale.
We talked about EQ stats. Chase Claypool leads the team in catches with 28 and receiving yards, 391. Then there's Kevin Stefferson. He's only played seven games this year. He did not fulfill all the traits necessary to get on the field in September. Has played now seven games. First two games were a little rough. Now he's starting to come on. In seven games with the Irish, 16 catches, 247 yards, and he leads the team in touchdown receptions with four, including two, against the United States Naval Academy on Saturday. So Brian Kelly was asked today, what separates Stefferson from other wide receivers on this Fighting Irish football team?
Tracks the ball very well. Has the, I would say probably more than anything else, just the natural ball skills and the ability to get over the top of a defense. But tracking the ball very well. Easily catches it, though he drops one in the end zone. I should, anoint him as the best ball catcher, but he tracks the ball very well.
Had that drop, no doubt, but redeemed himself with a couple of touchdown receptions against the midshipmen. We wondered how quickly Kevin could get back into the flow after sitting out spring, fall, and the first four games. And it was a little sluggish at first. But he's turned out to be a guy that can stretch the field and make plays for this football team. And with the evolution of Brandon Wimbush, hopefully during the offseason, looking ahead to next year, he can really build on this season because he has that excellent speed. You heard Brian Kelly talks about the way he tracks the football. He's the guy that can get separation down the field that can help everybody else on the offense. Just hopefully, whatever these trait issues really don't pop up again, because
exactly.
He can be a difference maker. He's proven that the last seven football games.
Absolutely, and I think that's why it was so frustrating for a lot of fans when they kept seeing, why is he out? Why is he out? And there wasn't a real definitive answer other than the traits. But when he talks about tracking the ball, I think that's something we take for granted with receivers, because it's something that you don't even think about. But when you look at the problems, Claypool, St. Brown, Mack, they're the three leading receivers in terms of receptions on the team, but they've all had balls that seem really like they should be easy catches that they've just dropped for whatever reason.
Well, a chance for Stepherson and Boykin to make an impact in this game, particularly if EQ cannot go against Stanford. Now, the Irish returning to the road. They are 3-1 on the road this year. Their most recent road game did not go well, losing to Miami 41-8. So, Brian Kelly talked today about what his football team needs to do going back on the road, taking on a top 25 football team in the Stanford Cardinal.
Exactly what we did at Miami that you can't do. Turn the football over. And we fed that, you know, atmosphere at Miami, you know, turning the football over. You got to take care of the football. Can't give anybody on the road that energy that gives them that extra momentum at home, similar to what, you know, we fed. You know, USC gives us a free possession on a punt, you know, and you just get that energy. It's just you can't turn the football over. You got to play mistake-free and eliminate big plays. It's not really rocket science. You know, you guys follow it pretty closely. You just have to play poised and disciplined on the road. If you do that, you got a fair shot of winning those games. They'll be close and hard fought. And last time we were there, you know, we lost the game at the end. You know, 38, 36, whatever it was, we lost by a field goal.
I've never really felt like Stanford is an intimidating place to play.
No, not by a long shot.
It's kind of like a Wimbledon crowd. Mm-hmm. Every once in a while, there's someone hooting and hollering, and there's some applause when something really good happens. But you talk about totally different environments. Miami and Stanford. Miami had that intimidating factor, and Brian's right. The turnovers fueled the crowd. It just fed those fans adrenaline. The place erupted, and the Irish just didn't handle it very well. That should not be an issue on Saturday.
If I remember right, there are games when Notre Dame goes out there and the place isn't even sold out, let alone even approaching the environment of Miami. I mean, Michigan State, definitely a much more intimidating type situation with their crowd environment. And I think you could even say Boston College, especially when Notre Dame comes there, is more intimidating. So I don't think that's going to be a big factor. And they obviously still need to take care of the ball. But this of the really good opponents that Notre Dame plays every year, I think that Stanford is probably the least intimidating type environment that they typically go to.
Stanford at home this year beat UCLA 58-34. The Bruins fired head coach Jim Mora. Arizona State was the next home opponent for Stanford. The Cardinal won 34-24. They routed Oregon 49-7. Boy, did Chip Kelly do some great things there. And how about the program since? Now, they went to the title game without Chip, but it was all his players.
Right.
Then a victory over Washington, which opened some eyes. Stanford beat the Huskies 30-22. And then the game last Saturday, Stanford got by Cal, who's not a very good football team this year. It was just a 17-14 final. Bryce Love, only 101 rushing yards. Now, he had the long touchdown run of 57 yards, but re-aggravated an ankle injury. And David Shaw today, the head coach of Stanford, says that Bryce Love is day-to-day and, quote, not as good as we'd like it to be, end quote. Bryce Love is a player that is a difference maker. Now, they've got some depth, but he is just a gutty kid. The ankle has been bothering him for over a month. He re-aggravates it, but he always seems to come through with some big plays for this football team. But if he does not play, it changes the complexion of this football game. And Costello, the quarterback, might have to do a little bit more than they want to in this contest.
Yeah, and I mean, watching that Cal game last weekend, he had that 57-yard touchdown run. And he didn't look like anything was bothering him then, but then he came back a few plays later and got that ankle rolled up on, and he had to come out after that. So, I mean, whatever he's doing, he's managed to find a way and play through what's been a pretty bad injury. But there's a pretty, like you said, they'll still run the ball. They'll do their thing, but there's a drop-off between Love and Cameron Scarlett, that's mm-hmm. for sure.
Sean Steyers, Darren Pritchett with you. It is now 29 minutes after the top of the hour. Finalist for the Outland Trophy is Quentin Nelson, the Irish offensive guard. We talked about that last hour. Mike McGlinchey tweeted out the best in the land. Congrats to my brother, Big Q56. No one deserves it more. Give him the trophy now. Stop the drama.
Why even bother?
Seriously.
I mean,
744 snaps, no quarterback hurries or sacks allowed this year.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Stop it. Incredible stuff from the Irish left guard. Rapid fire coming up. You'll hear from Mike Bray. What did he have to say after the Irish took care of Chaminade last night? You'll hear that interview coming up in a couple of moments. All on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT. Sean is right here. I'm Darren. It is 23 minutes before the top of the hour. Budweiser's weekday sports beat presented by Budweiser. And Sport Clips on 96.1 FM WSBT. The Irish and the Cardinals Saturday kick off a little after 8 o'clock here on WSBT Radio. We have Notre Dame basketball talk coming up in just a few moments. But right now, it is time for Rapid Fire.
First, you know, that Leprechaun lunch liner just ran there. And I'm sure Evan will come in Friday with plenty of ways to slim you down after you pig out on Thursday for Thanksgiving.
Could you do me a favor?
What's that?
Ask him what he eats on Thanksgiving, because okay, he watches what he eats.
Oh, I know.
So I'd be curious to know what a Thanksgiving would be like for him.
Okay.
What's on his plate? Because I'm sure the rest of the family has all the really good stuff that's not good for you.
Exactly.
But what did he eat? So if you don't mind.
I will.
If you have a second, I'd love to know.
Some paleo potatoes or something, or
avocado ice cream like Tom Brady.
There you go. All right. Rapid fire. Here we go. Doak Walker Award has announced its three finalists, and neither Notre Dame's Josh Adams nor the nation's leading rusher, Rashad Penny, are among those three finalists. So which of those two is the bigger snub?
Well, if Penny leads the country in rushing, it's kind of hard to argue any further.
I would think so.
Now, Adams has a cooler nickname for his Heisman candidacy.
Right.
But, again, he's missed a lot of snaps and a lot of quarters this year, and you can't really go against the guy leading the country in rushing. I honestly don't know who made the finalists, and I got to admit, I am so uninterested in postseason college football awards, because these awards, they come out with the first group of lists before anybody plays a game.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of already established.
Well, and that's a thing, too. And I saw
Will
somebody...
Will Fuller should have been on one list. And
right. And that's, yeah, Will Fuller never was a finalist, or I don't even know if he was even included on the watch list for the Biletnikoff a few years ago. It's mm-hmm. like, how are you leaving that guy off? And he ends up, obviously, being a first-round draft pick in the NFL, but he was never even on the Biletnikoff list. But I saw somebody say today, why are they announcing finalists now when you still have all these games left to play? We have the last weekend of the regular season this weekend. We have conference championship games. Why are they announcing these lists now before the season is even over? Finalists for these lists. And I'm with you more and more. It's like these awards mean less and less. We know the Heisman doesn't mean nearly what it used to, and all these other awards mean less and less all the time, too.
There is,
I think,
no big time professional or college sport with less interesting postseason awards in college football, which is a shame because how mm-hmm. amazing the season is and how fans love college football.
That's exactly right. That's Penny's offensive coordinator, for what it's worth, says it's a joke and a disgrace that he is not one of the finalists. And to me, if you're going to look at deserving, I have a hard time with the Wisconsin running back, Jonathan Taylor, getting as much recognition as he's getting. I do think that Josh Adams has been hurt just by the fact that, one, he's missed so much time between injuries and just sitting down precautionary when Notre Dame has had some big leads. And then he also didn't have good games against either Georgia, Michigan State, or Miami, and not to mention Wake Forest. And again, there was some circumstances regarding Wake Forest with the headaches or whatever, but time missed is time missed. That's just stats you don't get a chance to produce.
Was that coordinator also talking about Baker Mayfield when he talked about an embarrassment?
You know, I had a Baker Mayfield question for later. Let's go ahead and do it right all now, right, though, since you brought it up. Fill in the blank. The Baker Mayfield situation at Oklahoma is blank.
Ridiculous. I mean, like I said in the first hour of the program, your thank yous become more hollow when you have to say I'm sorry all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to do it with the flag in Columbus, and now we're apologizing for not once but a couple of times making obscene gestures and using language that had to be fuzzed up to shown on television. I mean, there's just no place for it. Just play the game. Be quiet. He can't do that. Now he's emotional and he can't start against West Virginia. I don't feel sorry for him.
No.
I really don't.
I don't either. And I think really the Kansas players from the time of the coin toss, and I just actually saw that the Kansas captains who wouldn't shake his hand, they're not going to be captains for Kansas last regular season game this weekend either. And I mean, all Kansas was doing was trying to get into Baker Mayfield's head, and they showed that they could do it. That's all they were doing. Now, I realize there were, it sounds like, some late hits and stuff like that, and I don't condone that by any means. But all they were trying to do from the very start is say, we're going to get in your head. We're going to rattle you. He still had a decent game. He had 3 touchdown passes, but like 257 yards passing, I think. So it wasn't a great game by Heisman standards by any means. But they showed that they could get into his head. And there are people talking about this could affect his draft status and all that stuff. I don't buy that because, I mean, Phillip Rivers, although he's toned himself down here in recent years, he was every bit that same guy when he was in college and early in his career as well. Your guy Jay Cutler saw that firsthand. Well, he used to be your guy Jay Cutler when he was in Denver.
My guy.
But yeah, so but that's what it is. Baker, just gotta keep your emotions in check. It's a team that knew that they couldn't beat them on an even playing field, so they were doing everything they could to get an edge. And all Baker Mayfield had to do at any point was just point to the scoreboard, but instead he
motioned.
He tipped the emotions and jumped off the other side.
I was going to say Kansas probably has more things to worry about than
man. Ugh. Good thing basketball's starting. That's all Kansas people are saying.
I told
right
you the
now.
Other day our two home state schools should like start a football series so at least one of the two teams wins one extra game. Have Kansas
exactly.
and Illinois play every year.
Exactly.
We'll call it the Bill Self Cup.
You're not into uniforms, but that's all Kansas football has going for them right now is a big uniform selection variety.
Remember a few years ago it was like Missouri and Kansas playing for like the conference championship at Arrowhead?
Yeah.
It was probably what? I don't know, 10, 15 years ago?
It's been about 10 years ago, and Missouri went 1 year, and Kansas went to the Orange Bowl the next year, and it was great, and
boom.
They both had pretty good teams, but it's a lot different now. Chase Daniel for Missouri.
That's right. Hmm.
All right. Back to some Notre Dame. Which is more important, beating Stanford to get to a New Year's Six Bowl or winning a bowl game to end the season, whether it's a New Year's Six Bowl or any other bowl?
I'm going to say just getting to the New Year's Six.
Okay.
Because for the players, they'll go to a much better bowl, better bowl environment, better opponent, better measuring stick. I've always felt like if you're not in the national championship game of the old BCS era or now in the playoffs, you're playing a glorified exhibition. And mm-hmm. I really think you're going to see more and more elite players not playing in some of these bowl games to protect their draft status. We started to see that. Jalen Smith obviously had the horrible injury in the Fiesta Bowl against Ohio State. And I remember saying the next show after that, you watch, some people are going to see that and they're mm-hmm. going to start tapping out. And Christian McCaffrey was an individual who tapped out for Stanford of their bowl game. And you know what? I don't have a problem with it. They're just protecting their health. And their bodies are their revenue streams going to the National Football League. So I think a lot of these bowl games will become more glorified exhibitions. So you want Notre Dame to win the bowl game. If they lose, it really isn't that big of a deal. If you win, it's a nice capper to the season. I think just getting to the New Year's Six is more important.
I do too. And I think it's much more important to do that than to get into and win the Camping World Bowl, for example, which is probably where they're going to end up if they would lose this game. But there are a lot of different reasons why it's important to make sure you've got that 10th win, and Brian Kelly kind of talked about some of them today. For one, they still want to, they have a slim, it's slim, but they have a slim chance of still getting in the playoff. Well, that chance disappears if they lose to Stanford. So there's that. They would also get to that 10-win total, and it would be just the second time in 3 years. It would also be the third time in the past six seasons they've got to 10 wins. And amazingly enough, when you look back, it would also just be the fourth 10-win season since 1992. So that is pretty amazing. And three of them would come under Kelly. And so, and I mean, when you look at the exposure of getting in a New Year's Six Bowl and the money and everything else that comes with it, that's all important as well. So I think it's really important that they win this Saturday, more so than just getting to a lesser bowl and then winning that. But even though that would give you 10 wins as well, but you need to win out.
Guess what? 10 wins also means, gosh, we don't have to hear about the hot seat.
That's very true.
Remember last summer?
Although I'm sure we still will.
On the hot seat. How can you be on the hot seat if you go 4-8 and you do not get fired and you have not played a game since? You're not on.
How are you on the hot seat?
Now, when you lose a couple of more games the next year, then we can talk about that. But it was ridiculous to say over the summer he's on the hot seat when he didn't get fired for 4-8. So he's okay. He's changing things. And now, from that to being a candidate for Coach of the Year at one point this year.
Yep.
Now things can change. Just the overreaction of a lot of people.
Always happens. Always, especially when it's Notre Dame. If EQ misses Saturday's game, do you buy or sell it as a big deal?
It's hard to say it's a big deal just because of how secondary the passing game is and how Stanford has struggled stopping the run.
Mm-hmm.
This should be a good rushing day. So just with the fact that EQ has 26 catches this year in 11 games, I mean, that's two catches a ball game. It's really difficult to say that, even though I appreciate him as a football player. We know what he's capable of. It hasn't worked out this year. It's not all on him. So even though the answer should be it's a big deal, I just can't say it is.
If you asked either of us at the start of the season, I don't think there'd be a question. Well, of course we'd say it's a big deal. Yeah,
panic.
Exactly. But right now, I think I would say it's a bigger deal if like Kevin Stefferson had to miss as opposed to EQ. Just because when you look at the recent production that they have, and I had to do a double take looking at the stat sheet earlier when I saw that Stefferson does have more touchdowns. He leads the team in touchdown receptions, and he's only played in 7 of the 11 games so far. So, yeah, so I sell it as well. I think it'd be a bigger deal there, and it's crazy, too, considering that St. Brown is still a guy that NFL teams are really interested in right now.
Mm.
Just the whole thing is odd.
So many great things have come out of this season, but that's the head-scratcher.
Yep. Big time. All right, you want to take a break and talk basketball?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Let's do that. He's Sean, I'm Darren. We'll hear from Mike Bray coming up in a couple of moments. What he thought of the... or actually, you know what? It's not Mike Bray. It's Ryan Humphrey, the assistant coach. Actually filled in last night.
Okay.
So the former Irish forward, Ryan Humphrey, will talk about what he saw last night beating Chaminade. That's next on WS. 6 minutes in front of the top of the hour. Sean Steyers, Darren Pritchett with you. The Fighting Irish basketball team won their opener in Maui, 83-56 over Chaminade. Matt Farrell, career-high 27 points on 9 of 12 shooting, 4 of 7 from 3. Bonzi Colson, 23 points, 8 rebounds. Freshman DJ Harvey with 12 points. The Fighting Irish are 4-0. Mike Bray had some media responsibilities last night, so the post-game show here on WSBT Radio, Jack Nolan and the broadcast team talking to assistant coach Ryan Humphrey.
Ryan had the scout for this game, and it'll help me out quite a bit. Did it go the way you thought it would?
I think it did. I think, you know, with us offensively, when we're clicking, we're hard to guard. Anytime we can get to the free throw line and make 18 free throws and guard and bounce around the way we did, we'll take it.
What did you really like about what your guys did tonight?
I think that, you know, we weathered the storm. Chaminade came out and played with a lot of pride. They threw in some miraculous shots, but we didn't put our head down. We kept playing, and we have a motto: can you do it for 40 minutes? And that's one thing with this group of teams, with the group of guys that we have in the locker room. We feel like we can play for 40 minutes while a lot of teams can't hold it up.
And Coach also asked this team, did they pack their defense? I think they showed that they did, in fact. You had 16 points off turnovers, and you forced 12 Chaminade turnovers.
Yes, I think, you know, once we locked in defensively, was active, got out to the shooters, we did a great job, and that's one thing that we want to take pride in. People talk about our offense, but we wanted them, when we leave the island, for them to talk about our defense as well.
About Matt Farrell, 27 points, just 12 shots. He made 9. four threes, four assists, and a steal. I mean, he looked like the Energizer Bunny out there tonight.
You know, for us to go far in advance, we need Matt Pearl. I think, you know, another thing that he did, you know, he got to the foul line seven times. I think when he's in attack mode and he's getting into the paint, he's making plays, he's drawing, he's kicking. And when he's playing like that, we're very hard to guard.
You know, Bonzi Colson, the ACC preseason player of the year, and I hope people don't lose him on the radar because he's been so incredibly efficient. He took 11 shots. He made eight of them, made all his free throws. 23 points, eight rebounds, and you almost didn't notice him.
Right.
What is it about him? I mean, he's playing at such a great level right now.
You know, one thing about Bonzi, when he puts that the jersey on and steps on the floor, you know what you're going to get. You know, you can almost pencil him into some certain numbers, but one thing that he does, too, is he brings his energy and his effort, and I think that for us to be successful, when our two seniors are playing this way, it's going to be fun to watch.
Three games in 3 days. You only do this in preseason, pre-conference season tournaments, and in conference tournaments. So what are the challenges that face this team the next couple of nights?
I think one thing that we always look at these tournaments last year when we went to Brooklyn, that it was going to propel us to the ACC. And so that was one of the same mindsets that Coach used, the motto again this year. Let's use this to get us ready for the conference tournament. And so let's see, you know, what we can do with it.
As you look at the floor right now, you got LSU and Michigan. You got any initial eye test thoughts?
Both of them are great coach teams. Michigan, you know, we've played them a couple of times in the last couple of years. We know that they're going to run their offense. LSU's an athletic, bouncy team, so, you know, it should be fun.
All right, Ryan, appreciate it, really.
Ryan Humphrey with Jack Nolan last night, and the Irish will take on LSU, who beat Michigan 77-75. Opening tip set for 10:30 tonight on WSBT. Budweiser's weekday sports beat presented by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. Sport Clips. Confidence comes free with every haircut at Sport Clips near the Granger Super Target. Irish basketball at 10:30 on WSBT South Bend.